Road. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by Johnstone Fine Foods. Buy premium Irish dry-aged beef at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Welcome to another episode of Dishing It Out with me, Gary O'Hanlon.
And me, Gareth Mullins.
And coming up on today's show, we will have our Johnstone beef recipe of the week from our boxes. Going well so far on that. I just got a wee bit of a telling off because apparently I'm not contributing enough recipes on my Instagram.
Correct.
So head chef Gareth Mullins has
clipped
bit
his wings.
Has clipped my wings, and I will be getting the tripod out tonight, as it turns out. We have Eurovision winner Paul Harrington coming on the show today. Love Paul. He was on the restaurant back in the day. Loves his grub. Really, really nice guy. And he
incredible
does the
music.
Famous... The lyrics, the thing with Pat Kenny. Looking forward to seeing Paul, guys.
Yeah, and you know, it's gas. We met him a couple of weeks ago standing outside Marconi House. And as soon as
you'll
I heard
regret
his
bumping
voice,
into us in the footsteps of Marconi.
But as soon as I heard his voice, I knew exactly who he was.
Yeah.
And because I'm a fan, I'm a proper fan. He's an incredible musician.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I love that. I love that slot.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
On the Pat, I mean, it's easily the best slot that Pat does of all the slots that he
boom, boom. Yeah. He's here all week.
I had to do it.
I'm surprised you didn't go, except for the odd time when Gareth takes off and I covered his lap.
Okay, that's enough of the jokes. Let's get down to the serious business. Don't go anywhere. Okay, so joining us on this week's episode of Dishing It Out, he's become a bit of a pal of mine over the years, brought easily the best menu and the one that I definitely made the most effort with on the restaurant. Paul Harrington, how are you?
I'm very well.
Very welcome to the show. Thanks so much, because you're on the crutches at the minute.
I am.
You weren't listening. Your wife gave you a battering and...
Oh man, I'm paying dearly, I tell you. That's what I get for messing the souffle up again, you see.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We bumped into you coming out of the lyrics, the thing, slot with Pat Kenny a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Awful timing for you, Gareth, and I nailed you on the steps of Marconi House, and we got you plugged in for here.
It's a real pleasure for me, because I love to cook, I love to eat, I particularly love to eat in restaurants, but you know, and I'm really not as good as people might think. My wife is fantastic. She's a much better cook because she follows recipes. I don't. I do it by ear. Well, obviously by the hand.
Well, Ciara Kelly's the same. Like, and I could tell with Ciara. Ciara was a guest of hers like a couple of seasons ago as well. Mm. And you could tell that she was a mother and she cooked and she had to cook to keep her house going or whatever, but also loved eating out and doing whatever. And you'll find that's the way most chefs are, you know what I mean? And the best natural cooks are the ones that aren't weighing this and aren't weighing that. And they've got a wee bit of a flair to it. So you certainly had that.
Who does most of the cooking?
Well, yeah, my wife Carol does, realistically, you know, certainly in the last couple of months, she's been like playing a blinder, like running the house with, and the thing is, we don't have a...
Does she know that you don't really need those crutches? And you
don't tell her. Listen, I'm gonna keep them.
He got in behind the door and he started jigging.
Yeah.
I said, I smell a rat.
and it's funny they should say that, because when I had a little since I did my leg in, I had a small spell in hospital, which kind of related to this. But they gave me another pair of crutches anyway, because so I have two sets at home now, so I can kind of
deadly.
I can.
You want to drag that out as long as you can, brother.
I will.
You know what I mean?
I will.
But we'll get on to your career in a wee while, right? And I know Gareth's never mad about going into the restaurant, but we have to talk about the menu that you did do on the show, because Gareth would appreciate this.
Well, as soon as you were coming in, he says to me, "Wait till you hear about the menu that you brought in." And I was like, really?
He ate something over 30 years ago
Trocadero. That's exactly right.
And it was a crab souffle.
Crab and spinach roulade.
Roulade, is
what it was. And I knew it was a huge challenge for anybody. Well, first of all, we couldn't find a recipe for it, because I went back to see Robert Doggett in the Trocadero. And
I went for dinner in the Trocadero, and Robert couldn't remember the dish. None of the chefs had been there. One or two staff members had still been been there, but nobody could. But you had it in your mind or whatever.
I did.
And I was just like, oh my God, like, what are we going to do here? But anyways.
And what was it?
Well, you produced the magic. Well, it was, you know, not to be funny, what it does, it does what it says in the tin. Literally crab and spinach roll mixed. So it was...
It was like a Swiss roll of egg white. So you end up making the spinach. We blanched the spinach and got egg whites up stiff and then rolled it out just on greaseproof or parchment, whatever it was, and cooked that. That came
steamed
out.
Steamed, though,
Yeah, I think it must have steamed it, yeah. Or it was maybe a 50-50, Gareth. It was a wee bit of dry as well.
It was,
with a high moisture content, I think. It wasn't just fully steamed. But then we took it out.
Yeah, I think.
And that was the key part. We thought, like, geez, I was like, I don't know if this is going to hold together. But they came out and they were absolutely unbelievable. And then obviously you roll it right away.
We did have a false start with the crab, because what happened was, I think at one point we used crab meat that was still quite moist and
it didn't hold.
Yeah, so we.
Yeah.
And then what you did was you separated that, dried it, and we said, well, let's come back to that. And then it really worked.
So that became the filling then. Like, so we lined it and obviously then rolled it up. So you had this lovely thin, just a millimeter or two of an egg white and spinach outer ring. And then we rolled that. It must have been, I don't know, like the crab meat was bound and something, whether it was a cream cheese.
It was a cream because when you look at it, there was kind of white, like a white line as well. I think it was either cream cheese. It was.
And when you originally ate that dish, was it, you just always remembered it?
I remembered it because it used to be served with a drizzle of pouring cream as well.
Right.
And there was a couple of things from the Trocadero there. There was a dessert as well, which I didn't do, called Wicked Chocolate Pudding, which was just a block of chocolate.
Yeah.
A block of soft chocolate with a kind of a raspberry coulis, which was fantastic. But this particular dish, I mean, it certainly mesmerized Marco and Rachel, that's for sure. Because this was kind
would have been up his street.
He really appreciated it. Like I said that day, I was in there and I says, oh my God, it goes, this is going to go well for us tonight. It goes, because he is going to see the craftsmanship. I've never been more proud of anything I ever cooked.
It was brilliant.
And sure enough, Stevie was the same. Like, and he would normally be nice about stuff like that. Like, but Marco would just was that he was like,
loved it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It was one of those days that you knew.
Well, if
nobody makes a balls of anything else, it's a 5-star dinner.
And we got lucky because the second starter was simple scallops. That was it. Fresh scallops in the pan, as you said, with the butter, the lemon, and serving the shell and so on. And of course, I had the funny thing was the main courses were T-bone steak and rack of lamb, but I had become vegetarian at this point, you see, which was bizarre. I had stopped eating meat from 2017.
Still? You still don't eat meat?
I still don't, but I'm thinking of going back on it. I'll explain that in a while. But it's a weird one because I kind of did it as a catalyst to lose some weight. I got very heavy,
right.
And which I did, and it all worked very well. But I've spent the last 3 months kind of laid up or doing very little, and I'm heavy again, which I have to go about losing. So I've nothing left to give up. So I might go back on it.
There's nothing wrong with a bit of meat.
Good protein.
I didn't know that you were vegetarian when you did them, but you still wanted to do a menu
absolutely.
That was going to hit home.
Yeah, but you know, the reference points were you know, my dad with the scallops. That was the whole point. Was I remember Thursday nights was a big thing to go out to Hoth to buy fish to bring it in. And
where are you brought up? Where do you live?
Colester.
And
so Thursday nights, my dad would go out, and they used to sell off the side of the boats on, off the pier. And he would, it was the first time I ever saw it. He literally would clean them and knob of butter and under the grill. And in the shell. I said, Mike, this was stuff you'd get up in the middle of the night to eat. You know, it was fantastic. And so on, the T-bone and the rack of lamb. And we did for dessert, of course, very cleverly, we did. Marco's recipe for
lemon tart.
That lemon tart has had a shout out on this show about 20 times. I've been talking about that lemon tart.
You proved my point that somebody comes to the table every season of the restaurant with a lemon tart, and Marco's, it's probably his most famous dish.
We had a chef sitting here a couple of weeks ago. To work with Ed Cooney's name, is he's the head chef for the Marion.
Yeah.
And he was on his death row meal, he said, I do something like a lemon tart, and we went, what recipe would you use? Marco, straight away. It's such a famous recipe. No,
but I
wish I had a lemon tart recipe.
Yeah, and Louise, if the recipe's bang on, she's a phenomenal pastry chef, you know, she really is.
Well, we nearly had a stumble on the second dessert, which was a sherry trifle, and we were just a little under on the sherry. I get it. If you've too much sherry,
I don't put sherry in my sherry trifle. I never have.
What do you put in?
Nothing. Just the jelly. Like, I've never ever. And I had a client in the.
Has anyone ever told you that's not a sherry trifle?
But no, Mammy never put sherry in the trifle growing up, and we just don't. Yeah. But I'll tell you something really funny. I had a client in the chateau in France a couple of years ago, and he said, I'm missing my mammy at the minute. The women are heading away. I just want a roast chicken dinner tonight. And they could eat whatever they wanted. He says, I want a roast chicken dinner with all the trimmings, and I want a sherry trifle. But he says, this might annoy you now, I don't like sherry in the sherry trifle. And I started to laugh. And he says, well, do you know what? I've never made one with sherry. And he said, what? And me and him had this mad chat then about a non-sherry sherry trifle. And I says, the fastest way of ruining a sherry trifle is putting sherry in it.
I grew up with the one with the fruit cocktail.
And that's exactly what he wanted. So the next problem I had was, where am I going to get my hands on bird's custard? But luckily I had a pilot coming out that way. Wow. I rang a pilot.
That's brilliant.
And he hadn't left.
That sounds amazing. How long were you out there, by the way?
5 years.
Oh my God. I mean, in my head, I'm still trying to get to Wimbledon, but in my head, I was trying to, I don't mean to play, by the way.
But I'm looking at your crutches thinking,
but it was my plan. I said to myself, now I must try and get out of that place or get nearby. But of course, that's the way time goes. Can't be 5 years. I can't believe it.
Sure, I would have just plopped you in the corner some night on the piano. No, man.
But that's exactly what I was thinking about.
It would have been no problem.
Ah, stop.
Do you golf?
I don't, no.
Yeah,
no.
Okay.
I
don't. There was loads of other stuff you could have done, but I'm just saying we could have. But anyway.
Okay, well, listen, just leave me behind the piano.
Yeah.
With the bottle of sherry. With the sherry you don't use.
When did that all start for you, Paul?
Me playing the piano. I can kind of do this probably quickly. My late sister, Siobhan, she would be 4 years older than me. She was in school. Secondary school doing music. She had no piano to practice her pieces on. And my mother bought a piano for a tenor, a very old tenor back in whenever that was, the 60s. I was born in 1960. So probably about 8 years of age, then I just started messing with it. I was literally kind of not knee high, but face high. So I just started plinking away. My sister showed me a couple of things. She kind of dropped it. And then I would spend, a lot of evenings, in my teenage years, just knocking out tunes. I don't read. I play completely by ear. So
you don't read? You don't read music?
No. No, so it's a.
And have you ever been classically trained or anything?
Never. No.
You've just learned to play yourself.
To be truthful, we did have one music teacher came to the house for, I'd say, a couple of weeks.
Right.
That was about it. And it was very strange. I don't know what this was about, but in the front room, it was a three-bedroom, semi-detached house in Colchester, but with four fireplaces. That was the way we used to heat the house. Ironically, that's the way I still do myself. I'm in a very old house now, and I made sure to restore all the fireplace because I love it. Don't forget the government and whoever, they're going to tell us to stop soon enough. Yeah. They're going to stop it soon. Yeah. But anyway, I digress. But there was.
Would you listen to the government?
As my old boy says, I'll be late in that fire.
Oh, yeah, I'll be the same. But I actually curtailed it now since we've had little Molly in the house as well. So we've cut it right back. We just light it for effect, maybe around Christmas time or something like that. Yeah. But anyway, so there used to be little old mouse used to come out of the fireplace in the front room when I was playing the piano.
Stop. Class.
When I would just play the music, this little creature would come out.
You had an audience.
And of course, she was the music teacher standing behind me. A very strange thing. She used to light up an odd smoke, thinking I wouldn't notice, and she'd have it behind her back. And plumes of smoke coming up behind her, So very, very, very weird. Of course, it wasn't as weird back in those days because, my mother smoked. Everyone smoked. I probably did myself at 12 years of age. But that was the way it was. But anyway, this little mouse appeared on this particular occasion. She got a terrible fright, startled. She went off, made her excuses, never came back. Right. So that was it. That was my formal training. I learned to play a little piece called Underneath a Shady Tree. That was it. It's about four notes in it. But the rest I do by ear.
Wow.
So that's it.
And is your family or your parents musical? And
yeah,
gotta be in there.
My dad wasn't. My dad couldn't, as the saying goes, he couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. But there were some people in his family. His brother used to play a piano accordion. My mother was a singer, could sing, but wouldn't sing. Her sister, May, played piano. And then my brothers, who all my family, they were all involved in printing and publishing background. They're all printers,
Right. Repositories,
different things like that. But they were all semi-professional musicians. So they were playing in the ballad scene and back in the day.
So music was always around.
Always there, always parties. On Fridays for pocket money, I used to polish their shoes and stuff like that, forget them for their gigs.
For their gigs, right.
And then eventually, I think at one point, I kind of started apprenticing with them, going and setting up bits of gear and stuff like that. But so there's always music. It took years and years for us to merge that. It wasn't until the 90s that in 1991, as the Harrington Brothers, we started doing music in North America. We started working in particular in a place called Newfoundland, which is a fantastic part of the world.
No, there was a chef. Did you hear him?
Jeremy,
he was over for the big grill. And I've never in my life wanted to visit somewhere so much after listening to him.
Very interesting character.
I've never heard of that place before.
It's a place called Raymond's. I looked it up while he was on, and it looked like the place is closed permanently. I'm not sure. Maybe they might have just moved premises.
He's released a book, Wildness, I think it's called.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, if
he sold that Newfoundland. Like, I just want to visit there.
Like the majority of the inhabitants are all Irish.
Yeah.
From
Waterford.
It's just one of them. Is that where Gander is as well? Is that where the famous Gander is?
Gander is a different land mass, you know, because originally when you used to fly to the States.
Gander's famous from 9/11.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah, there was a fund started where there was a certain amount of planes. They all ended up landing in Gander.
Well, there was no, because it was originally when a jet couldn't go all the way to the States, certainly in the 70s, you used to land in Gander to refuel.
Yeah.
And that was the place. But goosey Gander.
So all the people on a lot of the planes ended up putting together this fund now. So they send loads of kids to college on the scholarship fund on the back of the people that helped everyone that had the stay. Apparently their population tripled or quadrupled or whatever. On 9/11, and it ended up the right people were helped. And anyway, there's some sort of really lovely story there.
It's a great neck of the woods, the Maritimes. I mean, really, all of that is, and there's great history, and particularly as chefs, and you know, obviously you work with seafood all the time, you know, and don't forget that was their lifeline, and for years as well. You would have heard Jeremy. I can't think of a second name, but he was talking about the fishing moratorium for 10 years out there, And you know,
well, I've always wanted to do the trip to Gas, so that we might get a few Harleys and rent them in Boston and make our way out.
Well, it's a great, great trip. I mean, and it's a great place. I mean, it's full of Irish music. Myself, my brothers have played there for years. You know, we had kind of hit songs out there.
You were going to make money out of music? Like, did you know that was going to be your job, or was there a time where you went?
That's like a trick question. Did I know I was going to make money out of music? No, I know what you mean. Did I know it was going to be my living? I think I always knew I was going to rely on it. I was going to kind of fall back on it because for the simple reason I came out of school not knowing what I wanted to do, you know. So I kind of
was slipped. There anything else that you actually did do? Like, were you working or were you gigging?
As a teenager, I used to work as a kind of copy holder, proofreader in the printing business within the family. It wasn't their businesses, but where they worked. And then I came out of school, slipped into the civil service for a very short time, which turned out to be 7 years. It was an interesting place. I was gigging so much. I was doing about 8 gigs a week, and 3 of them were on Sunday. So Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening. So I eventually kind of said, I took a career break because I said, look, I'm making more money now from this, so I should really
focus on it.
Yeah. And then you've got your ups and downs, you know, along the way. And And you just, I suppose, like everything else, you learn to float, you know. Yeah. I mean, you fellas know you are both in a very precarious business, and I don't know what's going on at the moment where places are closing down and yeah. things are. So it is. I don't know what the statistic is for how long a new restaurant lasts or before it fails, you know, in Ireland or the yeah. UK. But I mean, it's a bit like that about you know, music. You can either go for the big time, you know, try and get your record deal, try and get this, try and get that, try and have your hit records. Very hard to do in a unless you get out of Ireland, because ultimately it's too small. So therefore you fall into playing and entertaining. Like I do all sorts of things, you know. As I say, I never even thought to say, is there a piano in that castle? Because here I come. But you know, you can wind up in all sorts of strange places, amazing places, and to this day, which is great. Like I'm 64. I'm still, you know, obviously I'm taking a little break now, but I'm back doing some work. I'll be doing a concert out in Galway in a couple of weeks' time as part of the Shoreline Festival, which will be my first time back since the mishap. So that I'm looking forward to, and I have planned. I don't have the precise date yet, but I in the month of May next year, I'm going to be doing a show in the main hall of the concert hall, doing the Lyrics of Things show, because I've been trying it out in the John Field Room since August 22nd. We've done small theatres around the place, so I'm just hoping that all of those 250 peoples all come together and you know,
how many fits in the National Concert?
I think it's
hall?
about 1200 or thereabouts.
Right, okay.
Or, you know, by the time you do your guest list,
so you were saying early 30s and it was kicking off, going over a new finance. So you would have only been 34 whenever, or 33, 34 whenever you got the nod for the Euro.
Yeah.
What was that process like back then? Like, were you and Charlie already gigging together? Did you know each other, or did some smart person think these two together would be a
good idea? Well, it was Brendan Graham who was the writer of the song. Brendan is, you know, has written books. He's written lots of, you know, he wrote the Eurovision song called When for Red Hurley. He wrote the lyric to You Raise Me Up, which is his global hit, huge hit. He wrote Rock and Roll Kids. And it was, the process was, I had my debut album out in 91, and I was working that, and I was doing well. I mean, it was I'd had two hit records from it. It was, the album was doing very well, and I think at the end of that 1991, I remember the song called What I'd Say was kind of something like number 15 in the top 30 of the year. So I was getting really well established. I was aware of Charlie through a band called Jargon. I had seen these guys. I went to see Chris Rea in the boxing stadium, the National Stadium.
Yeah.
Went to see them, saw him, very impressed with him. And that was the last I kind of heard anything about him. I went and did demos with Brendan Graham of a bunch of songs, like a working musician. I was a hired hand. I know your voice. I've heard you doing this What I'd Say hit. That's great. I love that. Will you come and sing these songs for me? I pay you. That was that.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a half a dozen songs, and myself and Brendan were chatting, and he said, well, what do you think? And what do you think of this? And what do you think? And I said, well, that one seems to be a bit of a standout one, you know. So that was Rock and Roll Kids.
Rock and Roll Kids.
So anyway, apparently he'd entered it in to the National Song Contest. It got rejected. And Charlie happened to be on that panel that rejected it. So so I think he put it in.
Seen it, he liked it.
Well, he put it in a couple of times. And then, but what I didn't know is Brendan and Charlie had been collaborating on other things anyway.
Right.
So I think that's how it got rejected that time, because I think Charlie kind of had to declare an interest. He said, look, I know the writer, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, sorry about the blah, blah, blah bit. But anyway, Brendan eventually came back to me and said, look, you know, remember we did this couple of songs a couple of years ago? And I said, yeah. And he said, it's after getting into the National Song Contest. Would you be interested in doing it? And I was saying, not really, you know, in my head. I said, oh, God. I said, I've got two hit songs. I've got a hit album. I'm on my way doing my thing.
Yeah.
You know?
And you don't want to share the love.
Yeah. Well, that's a very honest way of putting it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's true. I suppose what I didn't want to do is I didn't want to split my focus, but because at the time you know there was always that thing, oh brilliant, winning Eurovision, and then the kind of, so it's the poison chalice bit. So long story short, or, says you, what? Long story short, plenty of editing going on here. You know, I eventually kind of, I was going in to tell Brendan that I wasn't going to do it. And I decided, no, I'm going to stick with my own thing. And Brendan is a big guy, big kind of grizzly bear type fella. I'm sure he'll love me for that. But he, at the time, I think he was the chairman of IMRO, the Irish Music Rights. And they were based in Lad Lane there. And I was heading off to a gig with a friend of mine. And I said, look, I just have to drop in and tell Brendan I'm not doing this. So I walked in and I saw him. He was chatting to somebody in the office. And I said, hi, how are you, Brendan? And he turned around and he opened his arms like this. And he looked at me and said, well. And I said, oh, okay.
So, you didn't have the heart.
I didn't have the heart to say no. So it's kind of like that Groucho Marx thing. Like, look, these are my principles and I'm sticking to them. And by the way, if you don't agree with them, I've got a whole different set of principles over here. So there's a bit of that going on. So it's, you know, anyway, so that was that. So
but the right decision.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. I mean, it's something I'm very proud of. It's 30 years ago this year.
Yeah.
1994. It was a later point that he introduced Charlie. He kind of said, look, how do you feel about a guitar, a bit of this and a bit of that? And I said, yeah. I said, I've got the guy, a fella called Bill Shanley, actually a friend of mine. I said, he'd be perfect. He said, well, I was thinking more along the lines of another guy called, I said, oh yeah, I like him. I saw him with a band called Jargon, lovely song called Bailey Burr, a very sweet singer. So we developed a friendship and a relationship, and we kind of really met at I think the run through for the studio recording of Rock and Roll Kids, you know, which was beautiful. The studio recording sounds, to this day, sounds wonderful with the late Nollaig Bridgman on drums, Anto Drennan on bass and guitar, Bill Shanley, and myself and Char. And it just and another guy, a good friend of ours, fella called Tim Martin, who was no longer with us. He was the producer.
Where's Charlie engineer. From? I know he does be in Shannon, say it a bit. I think he lives down that neck of the woods, does he?
He lives in Drumshanbo. He was born in Dublin, raised in Ballyshannon, Donegal, and then finally moved to.
That's a big Donegal name that he has, anyway.
There's no shortage. But he's a character, and it's funny. We're gonna be. It looks like we're gonna be recording something for the first time in 30 years.
Surely you're sort of having a shindig to honor the 30-year anniversary.
You know, well, there was a couple of things. Cha had a few health hiccups, which he's brand new now. Mm. I had this stuff going on and we almost let it slip by, and then I think what happened was, I mean, I tell you what we did the Late Late in May. We did the Late Late together just to kind of mark the 30 years, and the next day I was doing delivering the votes for the Eurovision this year, and that was that weekend. Then the Monday was my birthday, turned 64, and then the Wednesday I banjoed my leg, and that was that. Right. So happy birthday to me. We're just going to take your summer and your autumn away for a while.
Yeah.
So but anyway,
where do you feel the Eurovision sits in world music stuff?
Oh god, That's a great. Well,
that's some fanatical fans.
Yeah. I think world music is interesting. I think that's a good way to describe it, actually, because I mean, a lot of journalists, non-cynical journalists that I've spoken to over the years, have spoken about, that over the years, sometimes Ireland might not have always put their best foot forward, whereas they would say that most other countries will take their best.
They'll really go for it.
Yeah, their best pop stars or their most popular, and they'll put them into it. So, yeah, I think it has, it's unique.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by John Stone Beef. Explore delicious recipes and discover their premium selection on johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by John Stone Beef, a tradition of Irish dry-aged beef built on 60 years of passion. Learn more at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Does the landscape of listening and getting music has changed? So I was talking to my kids about this. I have a huge CD collection, and literally it was one thing. And a lot of chefs, I think, have this, that you go, or I'm going to go and buy myself a CD. And then I remember I got a someone gave me a hard drive with a load of music on it, right? Now, I mean, there was everything on there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was before Spotify. Mm. And I was like, it was a DJ mate of mine. He says, hey, I'm not getting this hard drive. And there's literally, he says, any song you can think of, type it in. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't like that. I'm going to just keep going and walking into a record store. And but then, all of a sudden, Spotify came in and I stopped buying something that I really love doing. And I often think, why did I stop?
Lots of people love doing it.
Yeah.
But well, I hear now any musician that I talk to, they were like, well, the way you make money now is through gigs. He's like, you don't make it by record sales anymore, which is sad.
No, it is sad. I mean, look, that said, you know, depending how big you are, I mean, I would get kind of a certain amount of an income from Spotify. Nobody's retired and are buying the house in Barbados on that. Yeah. But it's an interesting model. Now, if they were to increase the amount to the artist, it would really work because, you know, back in the day when you bought, say, for example, this box set, that was a one-off purchase. Whereas every time you listen to something online or you stream it, the artist is getting a little bit every time. So it's not perfect by any means.
You'd want to be a Taylor Swift numbers to be made.
Well, oh no, absolutely. But again,
scandalous, the artist.
I think what Gareth is saying is the experience. But don't forget, we now live in a world of shortcuts.
Yeah.
Everything is designed to get there quicker, get there faster, which is a nonsense because the whole process, it's like people even buying stuff online. I mean, if I'm buying clothes or shoes or whatever it might be, I kind of like the process
of
going in and experiencing. You know, I mean, something I used to do years ago, I enjoyed it as a musician. I used to go in, there was a couple of shops in town that I would go in, try on a suit. And if I liked it, if it might be £500 or £600, I'd put a deposit on it.
Right.
Yeah.
And because then I could go back in and pay some more of it and you could try it on again. And then you kind of got you got that lovely.
You got invested in it.
Well, exactly. And you got that
invested in it. Yeah, yeah. You know? And it was the same with even, which isn't a million years ago, was maybe a weekend night and popping into Extravision or Blockbuster.
Exactly.
Picking out a film or whatever. Like, I mean, it's just, it used to be a really cool thing to do.
The only other thing I think still is like for cookery books, you know, like I still buy a lot of cookery books.
Yeah.
And people are kind of go, why are you buying so many cookery books? And I'm like, you will always find, and I'm sure for a musician, it's listening to different genres, different musicians.
Well, I would read more cookbooks than I would musicians' biographies. If you're honest.
Okay,
I find them far more interesting.
Yeah,
you know, I know plenty of musical guys who would, you know, they'd be reading the latest, you know, Paul McCartney thing or whatever it might be. You know, I'm not a terrific reader as in sitting down to read a book. You know, I there wouldn't be too many of them and there's very few of them would hold my interest, you know. Mm. And now there's just, I don't mean that it's bad work. It just, as they say, it's...
just not for you.
Yeah, you know, or people would say, well, you just haven't found the right book yet. But I do read, but not necessarily.
And do you still find new sounds in music? That's another question I always want to ask.
I'm very much old school. I'm a piano man, a singer. I kind of gave up on the whole songwriting thing because I just discovered there was far more people who were saying what I wanted to say far better than me, nicer. And again, that's like the show I do is literally, you know, the background story to a song. But I'm not trying to bring it back to that. Now, I'll be doing an original song at Christmas time. I'm going to be recording this with Charlie. We're dedicating this to the hospice organizations. We're going to be turning on the lights there in Harold's Cross at Christmas time. So I just thought it might be a nice idea to do something like that and for he and I to record again for the first time in 30 years. But to answer your question, I'm old fashioned. There's a lot of stuff out there that I just could not listen to, that I just would be unbearable.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's partly my age and it's also partly because it's crap.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean? But, you know, I mean, like, you have to call a spade, you know?
Yeah. Going to the lyrics, the thing then, when, and obviously Gareth is the resident chef and Pat Kennedy, who's just great to have both of you together. When did that idea come up? Was it somebody in Pat's team, or did they come to you and say, like, let's try and... Because now you've got an album out of it, you've got live shows out of it, you're hoping to have an even bigger live show at the National Concert Hall. What date's that, actually? Do you know?
It's definitely the month of May of 2025. It's around around my 65th birthday, so that's the 30th of May. So I'm hoping
ourselves to that.
I'll be getting in touch for sure. Well, first of all, you know, anyone who knows Pat or works with Pat Kenny, he's a very generous guy. He's very inclusive, and he builds a show that has, I mean, for listeners, people love routine. They love to know that's going to happen. Then I can sit down and have my cup of tea. Yep. Oh, your man's on. He's going to be cooking, and that's the way it is. And people can set their clocks by that. And so, I mean, when Pat joined the station, we started off doing stuff like one hit wonders and music from movies, and we used to like have a piano up in the studio, and we'd wing it, you know, a lot of the time. So it developed. And then we came up with the idea of this, the kind of lyrics, the thing, story behind the song. And this, one of the reasons as well why I'm going to be doing the thing in the concert hall in May is because this will, by March of next year, 2025, this will be running every Tuesday for 5 years, which is extraordinary. Mm. You know, I mean, I think it's the longest I've stuck at anything other than my marriage. my second marriage.
I was going to say, which one?
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Just thought I'd throw that in.
But it's deadly, though, because, like, obviously, if I'm not in the kitchens or whatever and I'm in the car and I always get it, but some of them they're just brilliant, you know what I mean? Like,
well, I think the thing is, anyone
I'm
who
sure might, they all are, but I mean, well, no, that is the ones, no, no, the ones I hear.
Well, listen, because
it's always a big song, obviously, you know what I mean?
And it's the challenge to strip it down, and it's also, I like meeting people now and again when some people say, God, I heard you were gonna attempt this, and I was gonna go, oh no, this is gonna be a car crash, and then you say, oh geez, you did a great job. Now, I'm sure there's a few in there that are car crashy. You know, like there's a million of them there. By the way, there's another, speaking of Spotify, there's about 7 or 8 albums of it all up there. And I thought it was too big an opportunity. For, don't forget, you can have all your streaming and your podcasts and this and that and the other, which have become a very valuable thing to listen to, I find, certainly at nighttime. Mm. But there's, you know, it's 10 minutes of radio every week, national radio is quite a gift. You know, especially if you're in a game like this.
Yeah.
And you know, I thought it would be mad not to develop it. Mm. You know, and market in some way.
Mm.
I did very little about it for the first year, maybe the second year, because it all came out of the pandemic. Actually, Gary, you asked the question. This particular series came out of the pandemic, and because they said, look, I used to do it periodically, and they said, look, can you do 1 week? And
it's the same. I used to do it once. First went on as Ask the Experts, and I went on to talk about something, can't remember what it was, but, and then it was like, oh, do you want to come on once a month? And I was like, yeah, sure.
Why not?
And then it was like the pandemic started, and it was we'll have you on every Friday. And I remember the first one I done scones or something, right? Everyone was doing banana bread and scones, and then like, oh yeah, come in next week. And then like, it's a commitment to a recipe every week.
But I
love the challenge of it.
Me too.
I like coming over to the studio on a Friday morning. It's a big part of my week. I always sit with somebody quite interesting before you go on.
I couldn't agree with you more. I normally cycle. So for me, I live out in Drumcondra. So for me, it is a ritual. I would get my sack.
And I'm his fill-in.
Sure.
For years, it's gas.
I hear they're ducking and diving around the gardening thing at the moment.
I'm the only chef he trusted not to try and steal the show.
He knows you're too busy.
Honestly, no, it's great. And Pat's love, he's a lovely way about him.
He really
Pat
has.
And Anton Savage and Kira, like, I did Kira's Lunchtime Live, I think, for 3 or 4 years, but Anton Savage is really into his food as well, like, and Pat Kenny, like, there's three people you could chat food to in the studio, because not everybody can hold, like, you know, you have different hands with different presenters as well.
I know.
Just be like, oh, here,
get, oh, it's scary.
I won't say who now.
Yeah, I Anton is his music is a bit more left of field than mine, so I have to be careful what I choose for. Yeah. You know?
And on the live show, do you do a wee intro to each song then as well?
Absolutely. I the way it's presented really is I have an opening chat about what this what the show is about. I don't say what songs I'm going to sing. They're all classic songs.
Yeah.
And I move them around. I change them around. And it's I kind of set it up without kind of saying what the song title is, and then people would hear the first few chords and say, sure, that's what it is, or I didn't know that about that. So
I see Wild Horses here in Volume 1. I have a great buddy of mine. He's executive chef Margaritaville in Orlando, Crazy Joe, and he used to strum Wild Horses anytime I'd be homesick. We'd just open a beer and he'd start. I don't know why that tune, but it always used to get me in good form.
He used to sit
outside in the patio and he'd be strumming that out. It was deadly.
No, we always do that in the live show, actually. And it's funny, I hated that song for the simple reason in 1996 I was out working in Hong Kong, and the organization I was working for, I had to share accommodation with this guy who I was working late. We're in doing the piano thing, and of course I'd like to sleep on, but every morning he was up early doing the early shift, and he used to put his thing up to 11 with Wild Horses. I wanted to kill after 6 weeks of that, I wanted to kill him.
The closing tradition on the pod is that you have to tell us your death row meal. It can be a singular course or it could be a couple of courses.
What are you dishing out to yourself?
Oh my god, death row meal, my god,
the last supper,
something laced with arsenic, I suppose. to get it over with. Oh god, I mean you know, it's funny, you know, even though I don't eat meat, that's a hard one, isn't it, you know?
Well, rice is doused in arsenic, isn't it?
Well, that's true. I mean could I resist a rack of lamb? No, beautiful thing. What do I like? I mean, god, a death row, that's a hard one, because first of all you'd be too sick to eat. What would I cook?
Give the old roulade one last run.
I mean, I would certainly eat that. I mean, I love, oddly enough, my late brother Derek, again, lived in Toronto for years and years and years, and he was a keen cook. But of course, I think I heard on one of your pods you were talking about the Parmesan of the now he used to do it with veal.
Veal parm, and
of course I think I was probably being snooty and principled at the time or something about veal, but you know, that's something that was amazing. And of course, and he always made, you know, a tomato sauce, a simple pasta tomato sauce, you know. I always you know, it's so hard to get, you have to get the San Marzano tomatoes if you can, and I always roast them anyway.
Yeah,
you know, and of course, and so I suppose if you're going for a roast on death row, will you roast these tomatoes first? But and something simple and light, you know, because I love a spaghetti vongole, love that. God, little fillet steak wouldn't hurt. I'm eating too much.
You're just trying to play it out so you don't have to clock out.
The answer is I don't know. I suppose it probably would be just a bowl of.
Well, you're a food lover, anyways.
Absolutely. I mean, scallops, of course. Yeah, you know. Again, I heard you talking about Dover sole, which is absolutely magnificent.
Yeah, Dover sole is one of the most special things. We make a really big deal about Dover sole at the K Club, and you know, we do a table side, and it's the bone table side.
I'm going out.
I cooked it
for a friend of mine who came over from Canada, and I found it hard to source. I had to order it in through Wrights in Fairview. It's not always sitting there.
Oh no,
but there's
too expensive to just be floating about, you see.
They leave it floating in the ocean. That's what they do. But the lemon sole I love as well. I love doing that. Strips, just
lemon sole. I haven't had lemon sole for a long time. We used to cook a lot of that in the Rosapenna back in the day. Isn't it gorgeous?
Beautiful.
Lemon sole's really nice.
Yeah, it's nice and simple and cooks quickly as well. You know?
So lemon sole, Dover sole, beef fillet, spaghetti rack of lamb,
veal parmesan,
veal parm, and
I'll probably think of something else.
Do you know, there's a book in just that in itself.
I haven't gone for anything sweet. I mean, you know,
yes.
I'm not really a huge. You know what? Again, I find you can't resist a classic prawn cocktail.
Yeah,
that is absolutely one of my favourites too.
That's more before.
I love the
Mammy one on Christmas Day, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we were too poor to have it all year, but we'd have it on Christmas Day.
Well, I think I'd go out on that. I think I'd probably, you know what, I'd say, listen, lads, strike all that. Just bring me a really good prawn cocktail, good wedge of lemon with the gauze over it or whatever it
yeah.
is. So because there's nothing worse on death row trying to pick the pips out
than choking on a pip. Well, listen, Paul, thanks a million for coming in. We're going to dedicate... Our song to Kevin,
exactly. I mean,
your biggest fan, my brother.
You neglected to mention the fact that I have a piano here. I'm going to do a song for Kevin, for God's yes. sake. This is the real surprise, death row surprise, especially for you, Kev.
I was 16 and so were you, and we lived next door on the avenue. Jerry Lee was big and Elvis too. Blue jeans, blue suede shoes, and we never knew what life held in store. We just wanted to rock and roll forevermore. We were the rock and roll kids. Rock and roll was all we did. Listening to those songs on the radio. I was yours and you were mine. But that was once upon a time. Now we never seem to rock and roll anymore. Now Johnny's in love with the girl next door. Mary's down at the record store. They don't want to be around us no more. Golden oldies, but we hardly speak. Too busy running to a different beat. Hard to understand. We were once like them. How I wish we could find those rock and roll days again. We were the rock and roll kids. Rock and roll was all we did. Listening to those songs on the radio. I was yours and you were mine. But that was once upon a time. Now we never seem to rock and roll anymore. I was yours and you were mine. That was once upon a time. Now we never seem to rock and roll, no. We just never seem to rock and roll anymore.
So now we asked Paul for his death row meal, and he said he wasn't going to give us one, and then he gave us 27. For a fella that doesn't eat meat, he gave us lamb, he gave us steak, he gave us a veal schnitzel, he gave us the only
vegetarian to throw a T-bone steak on the dinner
yeah,
menu.
And a veal parmesan.
Yeah, that's just somebody that loves grub, can't pick a dish. So he just started lobbing them all out. He was buttering scallops at one stage and making veal parmesan. Nice cat, huh?
I could talk with him all day long.
Yeah.
I'd say he has story after story. I mean, he gave us a little bit of an insight into his music career, which I loved. And look, he said he likes the classics, but he could literally sing the phone book, yeah, and I'd listen to him.
Yeah.
Really, really lovely
fella. Absolutely magic, yeah. I was delighted that he came into us, and a great guy.
Yeah, and then so for our John Stone steak box recipe, I'm going to go with probably my favourite cut of meat. Which is the Côte de Bœuf or the cowboy steak or a ribeye steak on the bone. And really, when I'm cooking a ribeye on the bone, it's normally a cut for two people. I mean, you'd want to be, yeah, really hungry to eat a ribeye. And as well, it's such a rich piece of meat. And I love the scarred part around the outside that has all that wonderful
probably
marbling.
The nicest Côte de Bœuf I ever got was down in Mr. Fox. I ate in Mr. Fox a good few years ago now. Mm. And Anto did it with, oh man, like, I mean, there was a two or three potato dishes like on the side. And it just, with the minute you said there, Côte de Bœuf for two people, it really, really just brought me back. And
yeah, I actually sell in the restaurant. So I have an aging fridge in the restaurant where we hang a bit of Johnstone beef, and we do a dish called Beef with Spirit, which is a T-bone. So it's a T-bone that we age and a little bit of whiskey alongside with Johnstone. But we also do a Côte.
Do you know what's scandalous? I haven't eaten in your restaurant yet.
You stop. Have you not?
I'm telling you, man. I've stayed in the Marker now.
You've
more
eaten
than
in the Marker a few times because you're normally going watching. Yeah.
I'm always in a hurry up to
guzzling
the Aviva.
Points.
Yeah. burying a pint and running up to the Aviva or going into the Bord Gáis, yeah. But yeah, I've never sat in the restaurant proper.
Well, we'll have to fix that. Yeah. You and Eddie, we'll have to get you in. So really, if I'm gonna cook a ribeye on the bone, you have to take it out of the fridge for at least an hour before you're going to cook it. And then just season it really well with some mold and salt and plenty of cracked black pepper. Drizzle it in a little bit of vegetable oil. Get your pan or your griddle or your barbecue like ripping hot, as hot as you can get it. And then when you put it on, just leave it alone a little bit. What we want to do in the centre of a ribeye, there's a big piece of fat. And what we want to try and do is really caramelise and get that to render down. Then just turn it slightly on your griddle pan. That gets you that wonderful X mark on your beef. And what we're trying to do is get the edge of that meat to really caramelise, because that's where you're going to get all the flavour. Then turn it over, do the same thing on the other side. It's going to be on the barbecue or in the griddle pan for probably 5 or 6 minutes on either side. And then I would probably pop it into the oven for another 10 or 12 minutes to bring it up to medium rare. Take it out. So like 20 minutes probably it's going to take you to cook a steak at that size.
17 minutes at 180.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Depending on how much you sear it at. Like,
true.
Yeah, and if depending on how thick it is, but the ones in the box, they're like a good 2 inches thick, and there's nearly a kilo of meat, so there is a bit of cooking them. So what Gary said there probably is about bang on 70 minutes at 180. Or if you wanted to even hurry the oven up a little bit. And then the most important part of cooking a steak is the resting process. You hear us talking about it all the time. Yeah, exactly. Gary's giving me the nod here, 5 or 6 minutes, but you definitely want to rest it. And a question,
the bigger the piece, the longer the rest, exactly. Gaz, right?
Yeah, and really, it's kind of half the cooking time nearly it needs to rest for. So, and that process of resting the meat just lets all the juices run through the steak. A steak is a muscle, so the way I like to describe it is, if you've ever burnt your finger and you get the way the skin tightens up, the exact same thing happens to a piece of protein when you're cooking it. So you have to just let it rest for a few minutes. And then, I mean, whatever sauce you like, would I give a peppered sauce recipe here a few weeks ago. If you wanted to go all out and make a béarnaise sauce, I think that's probably just YouTube, but it's basically eggs, yeah, and vinegar and tarragon and clarified butter, but it's probably the most delicious thing to have with a Côte de Bœuf. If you, that's probably my debt row meal, I think.
Côte de Bœuf is nice, man. Yeah.
Côte de Bœuf and a big
You gotta get the spuds right. Like, it's gotta be a nice, good, crispy Morris Piper chip.
Yeah, definitely chip.
Mash is even nice, you know, a nice buttery mash or champ. And
well, I cooked the Côte de Bœuf for home yesterday. It was off the bone, and I done gratin potatoes. Yeah. And we done, I done Yorkshire puddings, and I used the beef tallow to make the Yorkies. Man, it was good.
I inspired you.
You inspired me. Thank you, Gary.
Did you,
as
did
always?
You, did you get a did you get a dose of Dauphinois growing up in Donnymead? Did you?
Well, we,
when was the first time you experienced Dauphinois potatoes?
No, they were always.
Were you growing a beard?
No. As you know, my dad is he's a very keen cook.
Right, yeah, you were.
So yeah. My dad is hotel trained. So
yeah.
Things like Dauphinois were on the menu in Shay Mullen's house growing up.
Yeah.
We
so
were
your boys were coming and your buddies coming in with a football. Going, what's that? They probably feel sorry for you.
Exactly.
I always think back to my cousin Paul, his mammy making him spaghetti bolognese, and I started crying one night to my mammy saying it's not fair. Paul's mammy, the shite, she's making the meat.
So,
spaghetti bolognese.
Exactly.
Too real fancy.
Gourmet yeah. Dining.
I know. Feeding away in pasta. It's disgraceful.
Cool.
Good recipe, guys.
So now we're on to another favourite part of the show, our culinary conundrums. Ed Chef, what have we got?
Fresh in with a new haircut.
Yeah.
Lost looking a bit sharp. Of ginger over the weekend.
I was going to go for the Gary, but...
you saw sense.
Yeah, the Clippers ran out of batteries.
You're looking petrol. Sharp, Ed. You're looking sharp.
Feeling sharp. And I'm still thinking about you whipping out your tripod tonight. let's move swiftly on. Hi, Gary and Gareth. Big fan of the pod. This is a very short and sweet one.
here, we'll have to blame
that. Sorry, no,
the fucking okay, needs a tripod.
Right. Come on, lads. Grow up. Come on, honest to God. Hi, Gareth and Gary. Big fan of the pod. I've got a big family dinner coming up and I want to impress with a killer lasagna. Any tips for layering or special ingredients that take it from good to amazing? Many thanks, Georgina in Moat.
The key to a great lasagna is obviously two things. It's your ragu. You gotta cook it down. Anything, and I've said this a million times on here, anything with a tomato-based sauce or a ragu, time is your friend. It's got to be cooking itself out, getting richer and richer and richer as it cooks itself down. And also, your Mornay sauce. The Mornay sauce, I cannot begin to tell you how important it is that you get the flavor in the white sauce, the cheese bechamel, cheesy bechamel, which is known as a Mornay. That is the key. You got to use a really good, strong, sharp cheese. And another nice little trick, when you're melting the butter, making your bechamel, don't be afraid to drop in one or two little Knorr chicken stock cubes.
Oh, nice.
It just gives you a little bit more depth of flavor. There'll be lots of chefs now getting all snooty about this, that you're making, adding bouillon to a bechamel. But I'm telling you right here, right now, if you want to get that saltiness, that lovely depth of flavor into the Mornay, get the melted butter before you add the flour to create your roux, before adding your warm milk to the roux, get the flavor into that. Nice, good, peppery, salty, decent flavored cheese cream sauce. And as far as layering the lasagna goes, then you absolutely start with the layer of bechamel. So the very first thing into your cooking dish is you fill the base with one nice little thin layer of your cheese sauce. Then you put in your sheets of lasagna. So your pasta sheets then go in. If you're using dry, have at it. If you're using fresh ones, make sure they're cooked and they're blanched. If you're just using dry, they go on raw and hard. You just press them in. Then your lovely meaty ragu. So you've made your ragu. Like I said, it's cooked out. It's nice and thick. Make sure that you reduce it down, that there's no moisture on top. It shouldn't be light. It shouldn't be watery. It should be as thick and tomato-y as they come. And if you're worried that it's not thick enough, add a wee bit more tomato paste for the last 20 minutes as it's plopping away. It's really key. Lots of recipes will say put in a teaspoon or two or a tablespoon or two. You know those tubes of tomato paste?
Yeah.
If I'm making a lasagna at home, every inch of the tube will go into the ragu. All
why
of it.
Do people,
all
why
of
do
it.
People hold off on tomato paste?
Well,
lash it in there.
Lash really? In tomato
yeah,
paste.
But home cooks don't use enough tomato paste.
Home cooks don't use enough salt. They don't use enough tomato paste. They don't use enough.
Do they think it's just too rich? That's
yeah, I think they're worried that it's going to be tomatoey, but it just disappears into the sauce.
Most recipes call for a tablespoon of this or a tablespoon of that. It's like pinches of salt. There's nothing that annoys me more in recipes than a pinch of salt. A pinch of salt wouldn't season a, like... a slice of bacon. You know what I mean? Like, it's just get it in right, loads of tomato puree, get it nice and thick, and then every single layer, get the layers as thin as you can and try and get as much of the bechamel sauce in there. You want sauce, pasta, ragu, sauce, pasta, ragu all the way up, and then you finish with sauce.
Is there a standard issue number of layers in a lasagna, or can you just
keep... It all depends on the depth of dish, really. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I think if you're having a dinner party, it would be worth buying fresh pasta. They sell it now in the fridges in the supermarkets.
Yeah.
And it will, it just gives it a slightly more silky, nicer texture. Yeah. And if you, I mean, I love lasagna.
Oh, you and me both.
Man, I love it.
And do you have to use beef, or can you use pork or lamb? Well, or...
Traditionally, it's a mixture of veal and pork.
Veal.
Oh, yeah. It's from Bologna normally. Yeah. But I mean, most of us use beef mince. Use a lean beef mince. There is recipes you can put a bit of pancetta. I think you shared the lovely ragu recipe a few weeks ago, and there was a, when you fry off your sofrito, so your onions and your celery and carrot, you can caramelize a little bit of pancetta first. And the one thing I would say is just caramelizing your beef at the start.
Oh.
Like really cooking out the mince. I done a mince recipe somewhere lately. Some show that was doing, and I was just showing people that if you think about when you sear a steak, you should be going after that sear with your mince as well. So most people,
and then
just
pour off all the fat, because you get that fat out of it then as well.
It's that caramelising the mince is what's going to give your final ragu the body of flavour. Tom Kerridge shared a recipe a few years ago which I thought was kind of cool. He sautéed off the mince and then he put it out onto a tray and he roasted the mince through the oven.
Oh, wow.
Like a piece of roast beef. And that roasting the mince is where the flavour is going to come in to your final sauce. These are things that we take for granted working in a professional kitchen, but home cooks can pick up on.
Great answer and a good question, Georgina in Moat. We're going to Claire next. Thomas Davis, sorry if you've covered this before, but I've always struggled with getting my steak to the perfect medium rare. I either overdo it or end up with it too rare in the middle. What's your foolproof method for achieving the perfect pink centre? Help.
Thermometers. Just go and buy a thermometer. If you're really trying to get your head around and you can't figure out how to get the cooking degree right, the best thing to do, like chefs talk about touching it, and you know, like if you don't understand what a medium rare steak looks like, a meat thermometer, 48 degrees, cook your steak to 48 degrees in the middle and then let it rest. And when you carve into it, it's going to be perfectly medium rare.
That's it. Great stuff.
They're cheap.
This is a great one now. So I've just listened to all four seasons in the last couple of weeks and love the pod. After catching up and listening to episode 8 last season, I was lucky enough to be heading to Cork shortly afterwards. We took your suggestions on board and booked a table at Fishy Fishy. We were not disappointed. The food was fantastic. Here lies the problem. We had scallops, crab claws, risotto and fresh fish and chips, and my 9-year-old tried it all but won't stop going on about the brown bread they gave us. It was beautiful fresh brown bread but had a little sweetness to it I've never tasted before. Wondering, would you have any tips for making it at home? Next stop is a trip to Westport to see relatives and we'll be popping into on Portmore. Regards. That comes in from Harvey, who's 9.
Well, Harvey, a good Guinness bread, which I used to have this recipe printed at the bar in Viewmount House, because people would come for dinner and we were asked so often, like there'd be 70 or 80 sheets of it behind the bar and every week you had to replenish it. People would just want my Guinness bread recipe, you know, and I have treacle in my Guinness bread recipe and it's topped with brown sugar.
So good.
So sweetness came from two ways. So my guess is Martin has a version of Guinness bread and he uses treacle and possibly brown sugar.
I remember eating that bread in your restaurant.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, it was so good.
My Guinness bread is absolutely brilliant. And if anybody goes into @GazzaChef on my Instagram, it's in one of the highlights. If they scroll across it, it's the simplest recipe and I've no problem sharing it. I've given it to anybody and anybody that would want it. And it's right there. But it's a great recipe to make with the kids. Yeah,
there's no kneading, it's just mix it together.
Fire everything in together, give it a mix, really hot oven, and you fill it. It is absolutely foolproof. So it is, and One little thing I'd say is, regardless of how much treacle I have in the recipe, I always add in a tiny other little flicker of it.
The baker's dozen.
And the baker's dozen, yeah. And it's the same with the brown sugar on the top, because Janetta is one of my chefs in the K Club. She loves pastry, and she was giving me her brown bread to taste there recently, and I said, add more sugar than what you think it needs. And honestly, it's the difference. Always add.
And it has to be real butter on top, like.
Oh, of course.
A wee bit more, yeah. So that's what they would have had. They would have had a Martin's version of the Guinness bread. And the sweetness has come from treacle and then brown sugar being on the crust.
Great stuff. Good man, Harvey. And enjoy that. Enjoy your trip to Westport as well. And thank you all so much for your conundrums. Keep them rolling in at food@goloudnow.com.
So that's another episode wrapped up, Gary.
Paul was great, huh?
Yeah, he was.
Good show.
Yeah. I knew it was... I can't believe he doesn't read music.
I know, yeah.
That's mad, isn't it? Because, like...
I thought you kind of had to be able to play. But obviously not.
I know there's a lot of musicians play by ear, which is, like... I played a bit of the guitar when I tried to learn how to play the guitar when I lived in Australia, so I'd tink around with it. But I could never, ever... listen to a song and then go and play it. I find that so fascinating that someone's able to listen to something and then just recreate it. It's such a skill. But sure, look, yeah, really good guest. So look, as always, shout out to John Stone. So I wonder if any of you or many of you went and bought the steak box or the barbecue box. I think you should. So it's www.johnstonebeef.com, and don't forget to use your discount code, which is JSBDO, when you give them a call or send them an email. Just quote that and you get an extra 10% this kind of thing.
It is, yeah.
So, look, thanks for tuning in as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by John Stone Fine Foods. Get premium Irish dry aged beef delivered to your home at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.